Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You guys are your underdogs for this game, Mike. What's your reaction to that?
Again, not going to get wrapped into what anybody else thinks of us, whether that's another team, whether that's, whoever makes the spreads or anything like that. We just worry about going to work for ourselves. I think going into last year and the year before that, no one really thought we would be any good. It's okay to be the underdog in this city. I said on the radio the other day, like, before I ever stepped foot in the city, all I knew about this city was Rocky versus Apollo Creed, and this city plays the underdog well.
Nick Sirianni, the Eagles coach, talking about the fact that the Eagles, despite having the best record in the NFL, are 3-point underdogs at home against the 49ers. Yesterday, Peter, we had a clip from Kyle Shanahan, who seems a little agitated by the fact that the 49ers are favored. What you're doing is you're taking away his ability to say they don't believe in us, and you're handing it to the team that is 10-1. And Sirianni, you know, behind closed doors when he's talking to his team, he's not saying what he said yesterday. He's saying some of it, but the big point is they don't believe in us. They still don't believe in us. We have to earn everything we get. We have to prove everything we do. They think everything we do is a fluke, yada, yada, yada. And he gets his team worked up into a frenzy that creates an edge for them. Being the underdog creates an edge for them versus the 49ers not having that tool available to Kyle Shanahan.
You know, look, Mike, I think when I look at that line, I think of two things. You know that betting lines are made to make sure that there's either equal or close to equal money on each side of the bet. A lot of people betting Philly, a lot of people betting San Francisco. But I think in this particular case, the one thing that people are not thinking about is that, look, as Jason Kelce told me basically after the game last week, said, man, we were terrible in the first half. We couldn't get anything going. But we still thought we were going to play well in the second half and have a really good chance to win because that's who we are. And sometimes it's not about how impressive you look. It's not about sort of the football beauty contest. It's just, to me, I think I can't get it in my head. No matter how good I've seen the 49ers play since their 3-game losing streak. But in my head, beating Dallas 42-10 and just blowing teams away at various points of this season, particularly recently, where, you know, Brock Purdy is playing the most effective football by far, that he can play by far since any quarterback named Steve Young or Joe Montana roamed the 49ers sidelines. So I kind of look at all this, Mike, that I'm saying, and just say, I get it that the 49ers look so impressive when they're healthy. I get it. But, man, you've got to look at what the Philadelphia Eagles have done and how tough a team they are, just how physically tough, how mentally tough they are. And I just, it's so hard for me to imagine them not being favored at home in a game where, and again, I'm going to say something now that to me, probably you shouldn't think about, but I do. Just think about the tenor of that crowd. 4:25 Eastern time game. Those guys, those men and women and adolescents of a certain age are going to have all day to get ready for that game. This is going to be a decibel football game. And I'll tell you what, if the 49ers go in there and win, man, God bless them. That'll be one of the great wins that Kyle Shanahan's ever had.
Tenor, shorthand for blood alcohol concentration. After they're out in the parking lot all day long, getting themselves ready to be in full throat and full support of the Philadelphia Eagles. But you're right. It's a tough environment for anyone to play in, and it helps fuel the Eagles do what we saw them do on Sunday. Four straight games now. They've been trailing at halftime, and they found a way to come back and win the game. They are resilient. They are Rocky Balboa. I've said that several times throughout the year.
They are.
The question is, Clubber Lang is showing up this weekend. And now, you know, Clubber Lang from the first fight, not the second one, but the first fight with Clubber Lang. And you hit the nail on the head with the 49ers. When they're healthy, they're the best team in football. And it's not even close. But the thing that makes them great is the thing that makes them susceptible to getting their core players injured, which makes them vulnerable to losing. And that's one of the things we have to keep in mind in this game. 49ers come in healthy, but does somebody get injured during the game? And we know injuries happen in football, and we don't sit around and try to predict when they're going to happen. But when you have a team that is rough and tumble, run through the wall, going against a team that's developing into a fairly bitter rival in what could be the game of the year in the regular season that could determine where the rematch is going to occur in the postseason, there's going to be an extra level of physicality going both ways, Peter. I mean, this has got the potential to be old school, dial up the YouTube videos of the 70s and the 80s. You know, when you watch those old games, you realize how much safer football has become relative to how it used to be. This just feels like it's going to be one of those old school 70s, 80s, 90s games between a couple of teams that are beginning to hate each other and that are going to play with a degree of physical brute force violence that we don't see in a typical game. And if that natural process gets a couple of 49ers injured, I feel like the Eagles can withstand that with their depth better than the 49ers can.
Look, there's no question, Mike. Right now, you know, the biggest enemy of the San Francisco 49ers, and let's not even include home field in this discussion. The biggest enemy of the San Francisco 49ers, because this is a team that can go anywhere and win a game if it's healthy. But obviously the biggest enemy is, you know, injured reserve, you know, guys out for a game or two or three. But you saw what happened when Deebo Samuel and Trent Williams were gone. And you saw three-game losing streak. And so to me, there is a double-edged sword coming into this game for Philadelphia. And I believe coming into the last six games of the season for San Francisco. And that is very simply that among the truly great teams in football, you know, the teams at the very top of the heap, I think there's no team that's game you know, that has a game as susceptible to getting guys hurt because they play so physically. And the history, the recent history, is that guys get hurt in that scheme. So to me, I look at this game and I say, you know, 49ers, be careful what you wish for. If you come out of this with a win, but you come out of this with two guys gone for the next month, I mean, that is a really be careful what you wish for game.
And look, there continues to be a thought within the organization that if Brock Purdy doesn't get injured on kind of a fluky play early in the NFC Championship, Hassan Reddick comes around the end, hits his arm when it's up in passing formation. Purdy suffers the elbow injury. And it felt for a while, even after that injury, that the 49ers are going to find a way to win it. It obviously didn't happen. The Eagles run away with it 31-7. But now Purdy comes back to the place where that injury occurred. Here he is talking about the return to Lincoln Financial Field where that fateful moment happened back in January.
I mean, yeah, I got hurt there and everything, but, you know, for me, it's week 13. You know, we're going on the road in a hostile environment. We're late in the season, so every game is obviously big for us. We're going to go in there and get all, you know, sentimental about, man, I've come a long way since. It's not really like that. You know, we have a goal in mind, and I'm trying to be the best version of myself every week. So am I going to go into the game saying I want revenge and all this kind of stuff? It's not like that, you know. So I'm just going to try to go do my job and be the best Brock that I can be for this team.
You know, backward hat alert. Wasn't there a hot take artist out there at one point that said a quarterback who wears his hat backward isn't a real leader or something like that? Regardless.
Yeah, I'll tell you who that was, Mike. You know who that was? It was Ronnie the prop comic.
Okay. I don't think it was him. I don't think it was him. But regardless, I remember that narrative, like about Baker Mayfield or somebody. Oh, you're wearing your hat backwards. You're not a real quarterback. Brock Purdy, a real quarterback, and he's played incredibly well when he's got all of his pieces. The losing streak happened, like you said, when Deebo Samuel was hurt and Trent Williams was hurt. And you're right. They emptied the tank in this one to beat the Eagles. And this is what's amazing to me and makes the story so much more compelling. The 49ers don't even care. It's almost like they don't even see the connection, the cause and effect. We're going to come out here and we're going to do everything we can to kick your ass. Oh, but you know what? You may get some key guys injured in the process. We don't care. And it's not even we don't care. It's like, no, we won't. What are you talking about? That doesn't happen. There's no causal link between the two. It's amazing to me. And it's what makes them great, but it's what makes them susceptible to not being great. Their greatness comes from that reckless renegade mentality that, and you see it, you know, Deebo Samuel fighting for that extra inch. Somebody comes and hits him. Oh, and now he's on the sideline in the blue medical tent. Well, if he hadn't been fighting for that extra inch, it wouldn't have happened. But that's the way they play, and they're never going to stop that. I respect it. On one hand, I say, do you not realize? Do you not realize A leads to B? But they don't care. Yeah. They just don't care.
Well, Mike, I think they care. I think they care, no question about it. However, do they think, okay, because there's a risk of injury here, we're going to change the way we play? No. And that is the difference to me. And I'll just say one other thing. I've been saying basically since early in this season that one of the things that I do, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, is try to spot, some of the backup guys, even in important situations for guys like Deebo Samuel, for guys like Brandon Ayuk. And I know that that's counterintuitive to saying, we got to win the game this week. All that matters is this week. I get it. But with the 49ers, all that matters isn't this week. What matters is the big picture and knowing that if you go in without two of your weapons on January 14th or whatever the first day of the playoffs is, if you start the playoffs without two of your big weapons, you're probably not going to accomplish your big goal this year.
And somewhere on Sunday, once, twice, or maybe three or four times, Sir Isaac Newton, wherever he is right now, will be tuning into the game to see the irresistible force and the immovable object come together when the Eagles hunker down for their brotherly shove, tush, push, whatever you want to call it. You know, of all the teams out there that will be willing to roll up their sleeves and meet brute force with brute force, it's the 49ers. And, Peter, Sims and I talked about this yesterday. The 49ers are at a disadvantage. All defenses are at a disadvantage because they can't practice this. Shanahan joked, oh, yeah, we're going to do it live 10 times today, and we'll see who's left when we're done. You can't practice it. The Eagles practice it in games every week. They sharpen it in games every week. The defenses individually never see it. But if they're ever going to see anyone, when you consider that defense they have, if they're going to ever see anyone that's in a position to try to push back as hard as possible and maybe have some success, it's this defense they're going to see on Sunday.
Yeah, and I also think, Mike, that when you look at, because I think both teams are capable of playing a real physical game and winning. But I think the 49ers, look, I forget the exact circumstances, and I really should have looked it up because I know, obviously, we were going to be talking about it. But remember last year, the 49ers on one of the fourth and ones stopped the Eagles, you know, on one of those plays. And so, you know, they're not, I don't think they're intimidated at all by the tush push. I think they think they've got a fighting chance to stop it. I also think that, you know, there has been such a tremendous emphasis on, you know, and attention on the tush push so far this season that I think sometimes we, you know, obscure a few other factors in this game. And the one factor I wanted to mention before we got off this game is that I think when you look at what Brock Purdy has done, one thing that has really impressed me is that, remember, Mike, he had the real, you know, he's really only had one what I would call debacle game this year, and that's the Cleveland game. And obviously, he threw two picks against Minnesota in Minnesota, huge causal picks to that game, you know, to losing that game at Minnesota. And yes, he did lose to Joe Burrow at home. But I'll just say this. What really impresses me right now about Brock Purdy is that, you know, and I figured this out the other day when I was thinking about this game. Over the last five games, he's completed 73% of his passes. Okay. And that's not just, you know, ridiculously huge. I get it. But there's one other thing about the way he has played recently. Okay. In those last five games, his yards per attempt in those last five games, you know, have been 9, 11.8, 11.4, 13.3 against Tampa, and then 7 last week against Seattle. So you look at it and you say, he is not a dink and dunker. This guy is making sure that his receivers are getting the ball downfield. And so don't be calling Brock Purdy, you know, a guy who, oh yeah, he's a system quarterback, just moving the chains. You know, he's so much more than that. He's so much better than that. And his receivers right now, quite honestly, are all the better for it. I mean, look at this hit me in the face. How about Brandon Ayuk? 19.6 yards per catch. I mean, Mike, this passing game is not just an efficient passing game. This passing game is an explosive passing game. And I think the sooner people realize that, the sooner they will know that if these guys stay healthy, you are going to have to stop that explosive passing game to beat the San Francisco 49ers.
You know, you use the term system quarterback, and Chris and I have had this conversation before. We don't believe system quarterback is a pejorative thing. Game manager is. System quarterback, in our view, isn't, because Purdy is the perfect quarterback for Kyle Shanahan's system. And Kyle Shanahan's system, in a nutshell, goes like this. Just run the plays that I'm calling. Make the reads that I've coached you to make. Throw the ball where I've told you to throw the ball, and good things will happen. And it's easier said than done, because you got some quarterbacks that can't process the way that the coach wants them to, or they'll be tempted to freelance or try to buy a little time with their legs. Purdy does exactly what Shanahan wants him to do in that system. He's the perfect quarterback for that system. He's a system quarterback. The system run to perfection allows these ungodly numbers. I remember when it was a big deal if you averaged 7 yards per attempt. Back when that first came into focus as a stat that we on the outside realized that the folks on the inside put a lot of weight in that. If you're getting 7, 8, 9 yards per attempt, you're moving the ball. To get to double digits, which we see not infrequently now, but the numbers you rattled off, that's a system that's working. And finally, after all this quarterback carousel in San Francisco, whether it's health, whether it's ineffectiveness, whether it's whatever, Shanahan's finally got a guy who can do exactly what he wants. And it just so happened he was the last guy taken in the draft in 2022.
You know, there's a certain amount of if you were the quarterback starting for an NFL team and you're playing well and you're young, there is a certain amount of, well, we'll see ism about it. And I think we're getting to the point now. And look, if you look at any number of throws, but he's made a couple of throws where the word in the NFL, the popular word right now, is layered throws. And what that basically is that you throw it over a guy who is right in front of your receiver, a defender who's in front of your receiver, and you're layering the ball over that guy to get it to your own guy. And he has made some highlight throws while layering the ball. You know, the long touchdown pass last week to Ayuk is one of them. But he's also done it a couple of times in the end zone this year. The one time where Kyle Shanahan said, no, yes. And so he's done it a few times. But that is what makes Brock Purdy different. And that is what makes anybody who might criticize him and bring up the let's wait and see ism, you know, and that is what people, I think, miss. You miss it if you don't see the challenging throws that he is making in traffic, not just darts at guys who are open or throwing to a spot where his guy is going to be. He has made some of the best throws of this year by any quarterback in traffic, purposeful throws. And look, he's had a couple of interceptions that look terrible, look ugly. But you know what? The great ones have always done that. And we'll see if he can make, you know, if he can continue this, you know, going forward. And this is a huge test for him on Sunday. But I'd say, you know, 90% of the time, Brock Purdy is not only passed the test so far, he has aced the tests.
Because Peter has a flight to catch, we only have him for one more segment. And what we will be doing before we bid him farewell and safe travels is doing the Show Me Something draft for week 13. We'll do that next here on this Friday edition of PF Live.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Listen, I think any time that you've done something for so long, it's like riding a bike. You get in the huddle and you call a play. I will say, like, the first walkthrough I did yesterday, it took 5 plays to kind of like get back in the rhythm of doing things.
2 weeks ago, he was not in the NFL. He could be starting 2 days from now in Los Angeles for the Browns against the Rams. Joe Flacco, if Dorian Thompson-Robinson does not clear the concussion protocol by Sunday, Flacco gets the start against the Rams for the 7-4 Browns as they try to stay in the playoff chase. With that, we kick off this week's Show Me Something draft. Peter King, you are up.
Show me something, Justin Herbert. You know, vastly underachieving Chargers team sitting at 4-7. Open speculation on the future of the head coach, Brandon Staley. And quite honestly, open speculation on can't Justin Herbert and his new offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, figure out some way to be a more explosive offense and to make up for a defense that obviously is not going to be good enough. And so that, to me, I think I want to see what the Chargers show in their last playoff gasp against a team they should beat by 2 touchdowns, New England in Foxborough on Sunday. But Mike, nothing is guaranteed with the Los Angeles Chargers. That's why I say, show me something, Justin Herbert.
Show me something, Jared Goff. It was 3 interceptions in week 11 yeah. against the Bears, 3 fumbles last Thursday against the Packers, 6 turnovers in 2 games as the Lions prepare to go to New Orleans, where the Saints have the second most interceptions as a defense so far this season. And Goff has gone from guy the Rams couldn't wait to get rid of to look what we found in Detroit. He's the centerpiece of our resurgence, at least offensively. And now you wonder, is that same ceiling there that the Rams saw in Jared Goff? And is he once again bumping his head into it? I think the rest of this season goes a long way toward determining whether or not there will be a future in Detroit for Jared Goff. Hendon Hooker's practice window is open. Not that he takes over this year, but if Goff continues to play like he has recently, Goff won't be playing for the Lions next year. It starts Sunday. Show me something against the Saints, Jared Goff.
Show me something, Kevin Stefanski. You know, Mike, I really like Kevin Stefanski. I think he's got a really good grasp of what works for his team. You know, he obviously made a great addition to his staff in Jim Schwartz on the defensive side. But this is a game that a head coach on the offensive side of the ball has to figure out a way to win. You know, it's likely, but certainly not certain, that the Browns are going to make the playoffs. But the question is, will they be able to be anything other than a playoff team this year? And one of the things they have to do is they have to learn to win with a lesser quarterback. Assuming that's going to be Joe Flacco, instead of Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But whoever it is, you got to figure a way to win. They go into SoFi on Sunday, and they play a team that can really challenge the quarterback on defense. And they play a team that can score 25, even against a good defense. So figure it out, Kevin Stefanski. Show me something that you can go in and win a tough road game when your team demands it.
I love the show me something draft because the words mean different things. If you're playing poorly, you better show me something good. If you're playing well, show me something more along those lines. And I say that to Jordan Love, the Packers quarterback, who we will see Sunday night in primetime at home against the Chiefs. Showdown with Patrick Mahomes. Aaron Rodgers continued to miss Patrick Mahomes, never played him. Jordan Love gets a chance to face him at Lambeau Field with an opportunity to show everyone that he really is the guy who can continue as a potential franchise quarterback. Rough start, great lately, not many noticing it. We got a good taste of it on Thanksgiving. We get an opportunity to really see what Jordan Love in that offense can do, where he is right now, how far he's come, and what the future may hold for the Packers and Jordan Love. And what an opportunity going against the best quarterback in football in primetime on Sunday night. So show me something. Show me more of what you've been showing me, Jordan Love.
Mike, show me something, Bijan Robinson. And I realize that's a bit of an odd one when you look at Atlanta playing at the Jets. But here's what we have atop the NFC South. We have three teams within one game, and all three teams have quarterbacks that are sketchy. And I think I'm being kind, but all three teams have quarterbacks that could play a good game, but very often have not. Okay, and that's Tampa Bay, Atlanta, and obviously New Orleans. The reason I want Bijan Robinson to show me something, and Arthur Smith in terms of his usage as well, you need a difference-making player in the game to win a game that you really need, and that's the game against the New York Jets. But you've seen all year, Mike, there are games that the Jets defense puts the hammer down and wins games. You saw it against the Philadelphia Eagles. So the Atlanta Falcons must have some difference-making offensive players in this game. I don't expect that to be the quarterback. I do expect it to be the Swiss Army knife out of the backfield. So on Sunday in the Meadowlands, show me something, Bijan Robinson.
Show me something, Zach Moss. The window opens for him to come in and carry the running game while Jonathan Taylor recovers from a thumb injury. The Colts, by the way, we talk about where the Broncos are in the playoff chase, where the Texans are, where the Bills are. They're currently technically on the outside looking in. The Colts are the 7th seed right now. They need Zach Moss. He had 23 carries for 165 yards in their last game against the Titans earlier this year. He had 30 for 122 in the upset win in Baltimore. He gets the opportunity as they go to Tennessee to take on a dangerous Titans team, to try to go to 7-5, to try to prove to everyone that they're a legitimate playoff contender. Zach Moss gets the opportunity to come in and show us the kind of game he showed us twice before this season when he got the bulk of the touches. He'll get him on Sunday, and he'll get him as long as Jonathan Taylor is out. And he could help propel the Colts toward what would be one of the most unlikely playoff appearances of the season. With that, we say sayonara and safe travels to Peter King. Thanks for getting up extra early in San Francisco to join us. We'll take a break, Peter, and when we return, I'll see you won't. You'll be seeing your way out. I'll see Devin McCourty for the remainder of the show. So thanks, safe travels, and we'll talk to you next Friday, Peter.
Sounds good, Mike.
All right, we'll be back with Devin McCourty right after this.
Hopefully we'll be here for years to come too, but like 15 years from now, how old will you be?
I don't want to think about it. I won't be alive in 15 years. Like the joke's on you. I'll be dead by then.
That was last Sunday. of all the stuff that I do during the week, I really do think, and all due respect to every other platform and every other partner and every other co-host and whatever, there's just something that's fun, more fun than anything else, about gathering around that desk and just trying to make sense of what's happened throughout the course of the day. And we get the different perspectives from Jason Garrett, Maria Taylor, me, and the man who's joining us for the remainder of the show today. First time ever. And I've been waiting for this. I've been pestering. We got to get him on. And thank you so much, Devin. Perfect day for you to be on. Peter King had to go, so you are here for the rest of the show. It's been great working with you this year. It's like you've been part of the family for 10 years now, in a good way. Sometimes that's bad. For me, it's 14 years. If you're like, oh, God, it's 14 years. Yeah, yeah. I mean it in a good way. It feels like you've been here forever, and it's great to have you on the program, and good morning.
No, I appreciate it, man. It's been awesome getting to join everybody. Like you said, when we sit around that table, no one knows what anyone's going to say, so it's always some funny, good moments.
How are you feeling right now? And I don't mean to take this in the Dr. Doom direction, but that first year after playing football is a hell of a transition. Chris Sims says he sat around on Sundays and he was just like emotional. He couldn't even watch the games. Since you're part of the game still by covering it, how has the transition been for you first year not actually playing?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I think like it was my biggest fear, honestly, like to come and do something for, you know, 13 years professionally, but I've been playing football since I was 10. I never had a summer where I didn't go to training camp or I didn't do this. So it was a fear of mine. So I think being able to join another team and have people that you can sit around, talk football with, talk about life. You know, before we got on the air, we're talking about kids and what the morning routine is. So that's all stuff that I used to do daily. The only thing I don't have now is actual playing, but I still get a little bit of a fix of talking about the game, being at some of the games, calling them on the radio. But it was, I think, for all players, you have no idea what those first few months to year is going to be like. So for me, the transition has been awesome. I've enjoyed every minute of it. But now I still have to get through an off season because the off season will be just like when I'm playing. So I have to see what I do with my time during that time period.
Well, we were talking during the break about the challenges getting kids out of bed. When you're not playing, I assume it's easier for yourself to get out of bed, especially on Monday morning. That's the one big difference. You're still part of it, but you're not carrying around the bumps and bruises and aches and pains that you feel when you get into the latter stages of the season. You know, we talk about this all the time. Nobody's 100% this time of year, but from your experience playing, is there that physical, do you really feel like, how am I going to hold my body together between now and the end of the season? Does that creep in at some point, and does it become just a grind to try to keep yourself in a condition where you can still keep going?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. When you're younger, you probably don't think about it. You just get up and go, and it doesn't bother you as much. But as you get older, and I think especially those teams, like, we know how it is. There's teams every year that you know are going to be in the playoffs and have a real chance to win. So you have to always consider that in the back of your mind of, how can I feel really good come end of December, going into January for, like, those key parts of the season? And you are trying to do everything. So I look at these guys that played last night. When you have to get your body turned around from a Sunday to a Thursday, luckily for them, it was Thursday to Thursday. But when you have to try to do those things and play on the kind of odd days of the NFL season, you are trying to do everything. And it's all about the thought of, all right, after I get through this game, I get the weekend to kind of get healthy. I get a couple extra days. But that's kind of the determining factor. I was on some Patriot teams where I think we felt like the team was really good. I think about 2015. But going down the stretch, we just couldn't stay healthy. At the end of the season, going to the AFC Championship, we had like 15 or 20 guys actually on the injury report, but actually like really injured, couldn't be able to practice, couldn't do certain things, and it affected the way we practiced. And ultimately, we lost in that AFC Championship game because the whole team, for the most part, wasn't truly healthy going into that time of the year.
And the one factor that seems to be the most overrated, Mike McDaniel was telling his players about this on the most recent episode of Hard Knocks, from the week that they were turning around Sunday to Friday, sleep. Get enough sleep. And I know the Patriots are big on that as well. The whole science of sleep, the regeneration that happens through the sleep process on a short week, when you're not getting a lot of rest, when you get late into the season, you got to get as much sleep as you can. It feels like you're being lazy. We're talking about how we don't expect anything out of dogs. They just lay around and sleep all day. But there is a point where the most important thing you can do as a football player is lay around and sleep.
Yeah, and it's so much easier said than done because you have all these things going on. Your coach also wants you to watch a ton of film because we can't get the actual rep on these odd days to go out there and practice hard. And then guys who have kids and a wife at home. So sleep is like, yeah, coach, like I remember being, you know, towards the end of my career, like, coach, I would love to go to sleep. My son started crying at 1 o'clock. But you can tell the teams that are able to dedicate towards the sleep, the extra treatment at the facility, doing all those things, it does have a huge impact. And, you know, I think we saw a little bit in the Kelce documentary with his wife, how clutch of a role when you do have kids and different things going on, to having a partner being there to take on more things at home or take on other things in your life, how much that can play a big difference in having a good season and postseason.
Well, Seahawks offensive coordinator Shane Waldron might not be sleeping well for the rest of the week after the play that was called last night on 4th and 2 with the Seahawks still in position to take the victory away from the Cowboys. Peter King and I talked about this earlier, letting Micah Parsons rush free, having third-string running back DJ Dallas slip in front for a short pass that would have been taken in theory past the sticks. What was your thought on this design and execution by the Seahawks?
Well, I didn't like the design. I think no matter what, you know, obviously Micah Parsons, but when you look at the play, Micah Parsons and Lawrence are both on the same side. I don't know how much we want to try to slide down and have a play where we're letting one of those guys free. And what I really didn't like is this league is a copycat league. So, Mike, you remember a few weeks ago, we're sitting in the screener room and we're watching the Cincinnati and Seattle game, and it's coming down to an end. And Seattle's on their last drive, and Cincinnati just pressures them two straight times to end the game. Geno can't even get the ball off because the pressure's getting there. And now we get into a very similar situation. And Dallas, the series before, pressured on a third or fourth down to, you know, disrupt the play. So for me, Seattle, like, you kind of know the pressure's coming. I have no problem with going to a screen play in that situation. But it has to be like a wide receiver screen, quick, outside, then get the lineman out there. But to go with kind of what we call a classic halfback screen where you're going to bring the halfback across the formation, the quarterback's got to kind of backpedal out of there. Now we're saying, hey, how fast is Geno going backwards and Micah Parsons coming off the line full speed? So I just didn't like the design. I think even if they executed at a high level, I still think the player was going to have a really hard time picking up the first down.
I mean, you played for one of the all-time great coaches in the NFL, and I assume that he understands this difference. It's something Chris Sims talks about, how offenses will scheme the X's and O's and not take into account that while it may look good on the board, like, oh, this tight end's going to block Reggie White, like, The O doesn't always neutralize the X. It doesn't play out the way that you draw it up. And I think that's an element of coaching to understand, okay, this is how we think it should look, but it's Micah Parsons. It's our third string running back. It's a quarterback who struggles a little bit when he's under pressure. Maybe this design isn't the thing that we should be leaning on in this practical setting.
I would always remember sitting in our squad rooms to start the day, and a play like that would come up, or like you said, a play where the tight end, you know, motions or comes across and he's the block, one of the premier defensive ends. And I could always just hear Bill saying, yeah, I mean, this is what we effing want to do as an offense. We want to put our tight end against one of the top five pass rushers because this is really going to work out well. And everybody in the room would start dying laughing. But it is that. Like, sometimes a O is not made to take on a big X. Not all X's are created equal. And I think in that situation, you have to always think about that. And as you come to the ball, I think that's another step up for offenses. You come out and you see the play design. And for Geno to come out and see, like, all right, they got Micah Parsons right over there. He's going to come screaming off the edge because of what I've seen at the latter part of the season. We've gotten pressure, and they've pressured us in these moments. Let's get to something different. Let's be able to audible out. Let's have a one-word check to get to our best play against this situation, because you can see at this time of the year, you can have a game and you can play 59 minutes and 30 seconds, but it can all come down to that one play. I know we hate saying that in football. Football doesn't come down to one play, but sometimes it does. Seattle played a really good game offensively. They moved the ball up and down the field, no punch from either side. But all we're going to talk about today is that one play and how well you executed and how well you had that play designed.
And when we talk about X's and O's, like you say, a pretty potent X in Micah Parsons. The Cowboys also have a pretty significant O in Dak Prescott. A lot of MVP talk for Dak Prescott, and deservedly so. Where do you stand on the possibility of him finishing this out and standing out at the end of the day among the Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jacksons, Patrick Mahomes of the world?
I see him right there in that category. And I think the performance, obviously, he's put on the last few weeks, but it's always bigger when you look at these last 2 weeks, because it's Thursday. Last week was Thanksgiving. This was a Thursday night game. Everybody's watching. Everybody wants to see. And for this game, Dallas's defense really couldn't get any stops. Seattle marched up and down the field. So it was on Dak and his offense. And what I love watching from Dak is the spreading of the ball. It's going to everybody. I thought Ferguson had a big game, showing up in some clutch moments. And one of the biggest plays of the game was Dak was really sacked. He's wrapped up. He can't go anywhere. And he throws a defender off of him. He's able to roll and throw a pass down the sideline to Tolbert to pick up a first down. And here we go right here. And that's such a huge play by Dak. But, you know, Mike, as a defensive guy, I think plays like that should be called dead, because these guys can't pull a quarterback. Like they can't come in and hit the quarterback the way they want. So they're slowing down, trying to wrap up all softly. And then you see Dak, who's a big guy, strong guy, throws him off. And I mean, obviously a great play by him, but I think those plays should be blown dead, or defenders should be able to come in there and really tackle the quarterback and not have like this soft pillow fight that the league is asking them to do.
We see that all the time now with quarterbacks behind the line and when they run for years. Yeah, and there were multiple examples of it where the quarterback acts like he's going out of bounds, defensive player pulls up, quarterback squeezes another 10 yards out of it, all taking advantage of the fact that the officials are very aware of the importance of keeping quarterbacks healthy, because, I mean, you look at the quarterback injuries this year, it really has affected the play, but not last night. Both quarterbacks playing extremely well. You mentioned Jake Ferguson, and things happen so fast and you move on to the next play, the next drive, the next whatever. That touchdown catch he made to give the Cowboys the lead, you know, the ball was there. I mean, Dak Prescott was putting the ball there. Yep. And when you see that play, it almost squirts through his hands. And he does a hell of a job holding on to that pass and keeping it from hitting Jamal Adams in the face mask to get that go-ahead touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, he's covered. This is one of those plays where you come in a meeting room the next day, you say, hey, like, you got the guy covered. Jamal Adams is right there. But I think the combination of Dak understanding exactly where to throw the ball and Ferguson coming back underneath to make that catch all hands, yeah, he kind of double catches it. But Jamal Adams isn't able to adjust in time to get a hand on it. And I know for Jamal Adams, when he first turned, he's probably thinking, like, I'm about to make the play of the game. I'm about to intercept this ball. But it shows how well this offense is clicking. To throw a ball like that to a guy who's covered by a good player and for him to know exactly where Dak's going to throw the ball, that's that, you know, after the period in practice on Friday where you're doing red zone, that's guys going back down there on air, running that wheel route, jogging through it, but kind of understanding the ball placement. That's those little kind of few minutes that offenses usually put in during the week of just going over those plays, and you can see the difference a game-winning touchdown.
You know, here's a sign also, Devin, as to why the offense is clicking so well. And I don't say this to pick on CeeDee Lamb, but he had the drop on the fourth down play, and then there was a touchdown that was in his hands. I know he was covered and the ball was coming in hot, but it was in his hands. And they don't even miss a beat. Like, forget about it. It's the ultimate short-term memory for the player who made the drop and for the quarterback who made the throw. Nobody's mad about it. Nobody's upset about it. We just keep going. And it's like it never happened.
It turns into one of those things that when you get these football teams that are really good, they kind of say, like, we know we're going to be there. We're going to have another chance. Like, we were watching a game, and Dallas was down 8, and they score. And my wife goes, they're not going to go for 2. I was like, they haven't been stopped all day. I think they're sitting here like, eh, if we need to go for 2 eventually, we'll go for 2. But, like, we're going to keep marching up and down the field. We're going to keep scoring. And it's similar to me when we watched Philadelphia over the weekend. Jason Kelce has 2 huge false starts. There was no one that turned to Kelce and started yelling. Jalen Hurst didn't turn around and, like, put his hands over his helmet and act all dramatic. They just kind of clapped and was like, all right, let's go. And Dallas is turning into that too. I think even on the defensive side, Deron Bland has one of the worst halves of football for any corner in the league this year. Gives up, you know, play after play, touchdowns, and he comes back. And I text a couple of guys in the group chat. I was like, how crazy is that? He was one drop interception away from having this terrible game, and he was going to walk away with 2 interceptions in the game. Like, just like, because this team, I think they're resilient. They understand they have a chance to be there playing in the Super Bowl. And they're like, let's just keep building. Let's just keep getting better no matter how the game goes.
You know, it's an excellent point, Devin, and it's subtle. You see Geno Smith come off the field after an interception and slam his helmet down, right? You can't let those things linger. And you'll wonder, some teams, if it lingers, does it affect future performance? With the Cowboys, and I think this is our point, they just don't. They don't get dragged down by it because they have the ultimate confidence and faith that there's going to be another opportunity. They're going to make it work. We're going to forget all about the thing that didn't go our way. And it's not something you can engineer. It just has to happen. It's happening for the Cowboys, and that may lead to some good things.
Yeah, we don't hear that this time of the year too much for the Cowboys. This is usually the time where everybody's waiting for them to kind of fall off a cliff. But I've heard a lot of them this week going into this game talk about confidence they have in Dak and how the team is built around him. And I always think about, like, the teams I played on with Brady, we always knew no matter how the game went, if we just got the ball back in Brady's hands with a chance to win the game, he was probably going to come through. And to me, that game was up and down, up and down. And Dallas goes up 3, and then they get the ball back. And it was like, well, Dak's going to take us down and do something. Either he's going to score and put the game away, or he's going to give us that 6-point lead. And that's exactly what he did. And I think each time he does that, you're going to see that confidence grow and grow and grow, where people are not going to want to play this team in an NFC championship or in a divisional round because they're going to have so much confidence.
When we return, we're going to pivot to the Sunday night game. For the first time in his career, Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes plays at Lambeau Field. What do we think about that game? We'll break it down when PFT Live continues right after this.
What's it like to have the defense getting the spotlight, getting all the headlines around here for once?
It's different, man. It's different. But it's very humbling for us, you know, for us being a stepchild, to us being right there to, you know. But it goes hand in hand, right? Because as a defense, you want the offense to get up 30 points so you can go out there and just play passing downs. But as an offense, you know, got a lot of young guys. I got a lot of guys that's new to this offense, new to the league. So it's going to be challenging moments. We're going to face a lot of adversity early on, but a lot of guys are going to continue to step up.
Chris Jones with Michael Smith. We'll see more of that on Football Night in America. But it's that Chiefs defense issue. This is something Devin McCourty's got to love. The Chiefs defense is carrying the day. Consider this. 3rd in scoring defense in the league, allowing 16.5 points per game. 4th in total defense, 290 yards allowed per game. Only team this year, to hold every opponent under 24 points. That's the Chiefs. And Devin, without that defense this year, the Chiefs would be one of those teams that we're like, you know, they're 5-6. When are they going to wake up? Are they not even going to make the playoffs? They've hosted the AFC Championship game every year since 2018. They would not even be in that conversation without that defense this year.
Yeah, and I think Chris Jones said it too. Like, you want to be talked about as like this top defense, but overall, he's like, I kind of want to be talked about for both. I want to have a really good offense and a really good defense. But they know it feels good for when the Kansas City Chiefs come up that the first thing guys talk about is this defense and how they're flying around, how they're top 5 in every category. Like, that is the amazing feeling, especially when you play with like one of those generational quarterbacks. You want people to say, like, yeah, the quarterback is good, the offense, they go score. But this defense, Man, they are what holds the team down. And it's fun to see for Kansas City because for so many years, it's just been about Mahomes and Kelce and scoring points. But when you're not letting teams score points, it makes it a lot easier to win.
As a guy who faced the Chiefs, these Chiefs, this quarterback, what do you see when you look at this year's offense in Kansas City versus the past years when it seemed to be clicking a lot more effectively?
Yeah, I think one of the things that sticks out to me is how many times when Mahomes drops back, like the ball's not gone when he hits that back foot, or it's one hitch and the ball's gone. It's just so many plays turn into him kind of buying time, scrambling around, which was awesome when they had a lot of guys that had played with him for a while, the Kelces, the Tyreek Hills, or the veterans like Juju Smith-Schuster. But I think now for this offense, I think it has to evolve to more of Mahomes getting the ball out on time, kind of telling guys like, hey, I want you to run this route this way and the ball's going to be on you. Because I think they have those kind of guys. You look at Watson's a guy that he can be reliable, consistent to get open and catch the ball in areas. Rashee Rice has great speed, can run different routes. But I think the more you're asking these guys to kind of be in the same wavelength and mindset of Mahomes and what he's thinking, you see that only show up with Kelce. And now teams are focused on taking Kelce away. It's made it harder. But as a former Rutgers guy, Rutgers alum, I say, let's just keep feeding Isaiah Pacheco. Keep giving Pacheco the ball. Let him be the kind of bell cow on this offense and kind of go from around him, then get Kelce involved, then get the receivers involved, get Sky Moore on a crosser route or a deep pattern. So more Pacheco, I think, will help this Kansas City offense.
We only got a minute or so left in this segment, Devin, but give me your assessment right now on where you think Jordan Love is, up or down, pass, fail, to be determined is the big picture, but what are you seeing from him, good, bad, or otherwise so far?
I would give him a passing grade, and strictly because in this league, sometimes we expect guys to come in and always hit the ground running, but he hasn't had a ton of reps that were kind of consecutive. He hasn't had times in his career where it's like game after game after game he gets the build. And this season's the first season where he's got an opportunity to do that, and you're seeing it. It's improvement each week. It was some ups, then it was some downs, and now you're seeing him kind of progress through that, coming up with key plays. And then he has what all quarterbacks want. He has a host of weapons he can use, and you're starting to see him get to those weapons and use them. And this is all without Aaron Jones, a guy that we all thought they would count on with A.J. Dillon and build around. They've kind of had to rely on Jordan Love making play after play and then getting the running game involved. So I would definitely give him a passing grade going forward.
Especially when you factor in all the pressure that's on him, stepping in for Aaron Rodgers. Are you kidding me? The first-round pick they traded up to get, the guy who eventually will supplant Rodgers, now go out and do it. Give him a little time to get to the point where we see what his ceiling might be. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, could be the game of the year, at least in the regular season, 49ers-Eagles. We'll talk about that next year on PFT Live. The 49ers take on the Eagles on Sunday, possibly the number one seed in the conference on the line. Where the rematch happens, if there is one, will be determined by who wins the game. The 49ers are favored, Devin, by 3 points in Philadelphia, even though Philadelphia is 10-1. How surprised are you by the fact that the 49ers walk into this game as 3-point favorites?
I'm kind of surprised, even though I'm not fully versed on how they even decide these odds of the games and all of those. I'm definitely surprised that, and I know the Eagles, the 49ers, when they've been at full strength, they've looked incredible this year. But I just think the way the Eagles have played and are at home with that Philadelphia crowd, I wouldn't favor the Niners in this situation. But I'm sure the Eagles actually love this. They love kind of being the underdog. So it creates a great narrative for this game.
Not that you guys were underdogs often in New England, but would Belichick use that as part of the effort to get you guys focused and riled up, that they don't believe in you because you're the underdogs in this game, according to the people who make the odds?
Yeah, people used to make fun of us because in New England, we would find ways to like make ourselves underdogs in a lot of situations. And there's no doubt about it. This would be a week where Bill would come in probably on like a Thursday or Friday with some quote from somebody, and then he would piggyback off of we're not even favored in a game. Like, something like that would come up to let people know, like, I don't know how good you guys think we might be, but nobody else feels that way. And I remember 2018, towards the end of the season, everything was that. Tom's not good enough. The team, like, we felt like it seemed like every day we found something that someone said to be like, yep, let's use this, let's use that. So I'm sure the Eagles have some of this stuff taped on the wall somewhere in that building this week.
I remember the division round game that year when you guys beat the Chargers, and Tom Brady said on the field after the game, nobody believes this. It's like, Tom, everybody believes in you. What the hell are you talking about? But that's part of the mindset to dig a little deeper and put in a little extra. And both sides are going to need that, 49ers and the Eagles. I mean, that's what makes this matchup so compelling to me, Devin. It just has that feel of an old school brawl. The two best teams in the NFL who have a high degree of toughness and physicality that are part of why they're great. Something's got to give in this one. Which way are you leaning?
Yeah, and this is what we love about the NFL. When you get these teams where, like, usually you're like, oh, this league's a matchup league. Like, this team does this. Both these teams can play you any way. They can run the ball. They have some of the most dynamic receivers that can make plays, and both defenses will smash and hit you in the mouth. They can rush the passer. But I know I got on the picking the Niners as a favorite, but I am leaning towards the Niners. I think the Niners have been waiting for this game all offseason, all season. They've had this game circled, kind of like how Philly went into Kansas City a few weeks ago. They had the game circled because of the Super Bowl. And I think the Niners have talked about this game last year coming off the playoff loss, that they felt they were better than the Eagles. Injuries, blah, blah, blah. So I think they have so much to prove in this game. And I think the Eagles are really focused on, like, we're just staying the course. Like, this is the season we're building up, because ultimately we have one thing in mind, and that's to win the Super Bowl. And I think the Niners are going to pour everything into this. I think, and I know the Niners still have Super Bowl aspirations as well, but I think this is the Niners, like, regular season Super Bowl that they've been waiting for. And I think they kind of squeak out a victory. But I think ultimately the Eagles are more focused on the future and being in the Super Bowl than this actual game.
And the very real fact that I think, to get back to what we were talking about earlier about health this time of year and rest and ability to perform, 49ers played last Thursday night, had a couple of extra days, and the Eagles had that overtime, epic knockdown, drag out against the Bills. It's a lot to recover from and get ready to play the 49ers. The 49ers. And then the Cowboys the following week. Are you kidding me? And then the Seahawks. The Eagles have a heck of a run. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll wrap up this Friday edition of PFT Live right after this. Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code PFTLIVE when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. All right, every Friday, Devin, we pick a dog of the week. There are the spreads. Give me the one that you think is most likely to defy the odds and either get the win or, at a minimum, cover the spread.
I'm going out on a limb. I'm going Arizona at Pittsburgh. I think they're going to have a chance to have an upset. I think this team's been trending with Kyler Murray coming back. And I think they're looking for that big win. They almost got Houston. I think they get Pittsburgh this week.
Wow, that's a gutsy one. Outdoors in Pittsburgh with Renegade playing in the fourth quarter and the Steelers' defense all over Kyler Murray. But Kyler Murray's look good. They're going to have some things to think about in the offseason about the future of the quarterback position in Arizona. I'm going to go with the Jets. We know the future of the quarterback position there, at least for 2024. It's Aaron Rodgers. And I think, Devin, Rodgers coming back to practice this week and just that sense of desperation. Every time, and we've seen it happen at least once before this season, when the Jets are intensely criticized, they find a way to turn it around. And the Falcons just seem kind of wobbly to me. I think the Jets can beat them. I'm taking the Jets getting two at home.
Yeah, the Aaron Rodgers bump is all you need. That defense needed to see him back on the field for hopes he's back for a Christmas gift.
That'll be something if he's back this year. I'll believe it when I see it, and the Jets are going to have to win some games for it to happen. Starting with this Sunday, if they lose this one to Atlanta, you get to 4-8 and it's done. We're done. Devin, thank you so much for some of your time today. We'll be back on Monday morning with PFT Live. Until then, enjoy the games this weekend.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Three great words, free fries Friday, especially when they're used in that exact order. Get a free medium fries with $1 minimum purchase.
Valid one time on Fridays at participating McDonald's through 12/31/24. Excludes tax, must opt into rewards.